Welcome to the Sleep Health Connection. Healthy sleep remains an important part of one's health and well-being. Our goal is to bring you the latest information on various topics related to sleep and sleep health. Hi, I'm your host today, Dr. Lydia Sosenko, and I'm a practicing dentist in Naperville, Illinois, who has worked in the field of obstructive sleep apnea and snoring for well over a decade now. I currently limit my practice to the treatment of oral appliance therapy for the condition of snoring and apnea, and you can reach me through my website, tiredofsnoring.com. And welcome, and today's topic is maximizing insurance benefits for oral appliance therapy for snoring and obstructive sleep apnea from a patient's perspective. And I have a special guest today. Her name is Jan Palmer. And before we get to her, I just want to mention that today's information today is used only as a reference, not as a substitute for professional medical advice. Please consult with proper medical providers for your particular medical situation. Also, today's content remains the property of Dr. Lydia Sosenko and may not be copied or reproduced in any way without permission. I am very pleased to have our special guest today, Jan Palmer. A little bit about her. She's been in the dental field since 1982. In 1999, she's accepted a position with Dr. Kathleen Bennett, who is a diplomat of the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. And that started her involvement in the medical reimbursement for snoring and apnea. And she currently works also with Gail Demko, who's a diplomat of the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine and president-elect and expert advisor to the FDA. And also, she has started her own consulting industry right now and helping dentists with medical reimbursement. So she's also a national lecturer who's lectured at the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, and I'm proud to say she's also going to be doing this, so this coming year in June. So she has a lot of information, and Jan, I want to welcome you. Hi.
Hi, Dr.
You there?
Thank you.
Yes,
hi. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm very excited, and working in this field with snoring and apnea and medical insurance myself, I'm going to say it's probably one of the most frustrating areas for the dentists and for the patients, but could also be very rewarding and can change lives. So I'm very, very happy to have the expert. Jan's had more experience probably than most people working in the dental field with obstructive sleep apnea and snoring. So can you tell me a little bit how long you've been actually working with the physical insurance reimbursements for obstructive sleep apnea?
Yes, actually, I started working with the medical insurance for treatment of obstructive sleep apnea back in 1999. At that point, there was not a lot of dentists that were doing this in the country, and we had to learn a lot by trial and error, as the insurance companies weren't real familiar with the services either. Like I said before, there was a lot of trial and error, and we've developed some systems, and everything flows very well if you do it properly. So I'm eager and willing to train any office that needs some help with this because it's very important for the care of their patients.
It is. And I know on my end, the trial and error is just so frustrating. You're much better off using somebody who knows what they're doing just to show you, you know, how to do it and can save you so much grief. Have you found, so typically, how often have you found medical insurances for our patients, how many can, like percentage-wise, to expect coverage to get some payment, if at all? Just give us a little bit of statistics, like how many typically, you know, is there coverage, how much coverage?
Well, I found that in most cases there is coverage, at least partial coverage, for the oral appliance for sleep apnea. There are certain protocols that we must follow, with their insurance companies. A lot of patients aren't able to initiate the treatment until they understand their financial responsibility. So that's why it's so important for the dental office to understand what their responsibility is.
What can they do to help, right?
Yes, definitely. Once benefits are verified, usually by the dental office, and we find out if there's any authorizations needed or referrals, once we get everything in line and they have the coverage on their policy, there is no reason in the world why they shouldn't get coverage. So as long as the dental office does their job right and the patient has coverage for this on their policy, they 99.9% of the time will get at least partial coverage.
Wow. And that in itself is so important for our patients to realize, because I have heard some of the patients that come to see us, we also have an insurance person that works with us for so long on this. She's had, well, a decade and a half of experience on this. But I do see a lot of people coming to me from other offices that basically the dentists have said, no, it's not covered under insurance, or no, it's not covered under medical insurance. And so I think it's important to know, yes, if they are trained, it is, correct? I mean, most of the time, over 90% are usually some coverage at least, if it's a benefit, correct?
That's correct. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And would you say then that varies from insurance to insurance?
It does. Every company that writes the policy for their patients has different options to take. Some very few cases do they ever opt to exclude this service from their policy. So generally, they will have some sort of coverage. It's our job to figure it all out.
See, it's so important for our patients to know that. So, okay, so what about, let's go over, have you ever seen any coverage for, and this is where we're going to talk a little bit about the difference between snoring and apnea, and that's where I'm going to put my two cents in. So today's topic really is about the insurance aspect. We have other previous presentations on the difference between snoring and apnea and things like that, but overall, just to quickly summarize, snoring could be a diagnosis in itself, primary snoring, or something that's not really to the point where it's considered obstructive sleep apnea, where some insurances do differentiate, they definitely do, and that's when a person stops breathing a certain number of times per hour, per night, and actually has a diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea, which is a life-threatening condition. So now there's a lot of people out there. So basically, to summarize too on that note, you have to get checked out by a physician. Are you just snoring or snoring in the presence of apnea? So my next question involves, have you seen any coverage for people who have maybe gone through the diagnosis process and were not kind of true obstructive sleep apnea patients diagnosed? I'm just curious.
As a general rule, most plans won't cover primary snoring because they're not considering that life-threatening. Mm-hmm. In the dental community, the clinicals, everybody knows where the cutoff is between the considered normal breathing during your sleep and having a sleep disturbance range. There is also, with the snoring, I've seen a lot of medical doctors can put it in the category of reactive airway disease, which many insurance companies will consider for coverage. The best option to do would be to start an authorization, and if you get a denial on it, there's always a peer-to-peer review that the dentist can do with the medical review doctor to explain the certain situations, and sometimes you do get the coverage for that, but it has to have a diagnosis attached to it.
And that's really important for our patients to know. And there's actually one of our future presentations that we'll have is like the questions that you need to ask about your sleep test, because the summary could show you do not have what we consider in the parameters for apnea. But if you look during certain pieces of the night, you might actually reach even the severe range of apnea during maybe when you're on your back or during dreaming. But unfortunately, it brings down your average for the entire night to normal, which is one of my biggest pet peeves. And so a properly trained dentist can pick out those kind of things to help support our patients, you know, to get their insurance reimbursements.
You're correct, yes.
You know, and that's, oh, this is a big pet peeve. So let me talk to you. So have you found, you've been working now so long with the whole insurance and so many dentists, have you found the majority of dentists who work with obstructive sleep apnea, with oral devices, snoring, any of those conditions, to be adequately trained in the whole world of medical reimbursements and insurance?
And that's a wonderful question, and in a word, the answer is no. There's a major differences between dental and medical insurances and how you bill them and their different policy stipulations. As I said before, it's the responsibility of the dental office to be aware of these differences to optimize for the benefits for their patient. This is the major focus of my training for the different dental sleep practices. So that
right,
they can understand it.
I mean, I know there are some dentists that might choose not to go that route, and they're not required to go that route. That's just their choice that they decided to not, you know, bill insurances. That's really, sometimes they leave it up to the patient to actually have, you know, them themselves kind of run through all the paperwork and figure it all out. So I just want to point out there, I do personally know of several successful dentists who just choose to work that way. There are also the other dentists who want to maximize and help the patients, and they're very successful in that way as well. So from my dentist, from a dentist perspective, it's not, you know, it's really kind of more of a customer service that we do for our patients here to help. But I know that there are some dentists. But I just want our patients and people listening to know that, yes, you can get medical insurance reimbursement. So even though your dentist might choose not to help with that, to seek out, you know, to basically find that on their own as well. So
definitely.
What can a patient, right? So what can a patient do basically to help, you know, or gather together what to help their chances of getting some medical reimbursement for oral devices for obstructive sleep apnea? What can they do on their end?
Well, if the dentist is willing to help them with their insurance, even if they have to file, the patient has to file their own claim, there are certain things that they have to find out. And the big thing is if it needs an authorization. If the insurance company insists on an authorization, that has to be done before you can do treatment. If you don't do an authorization when it's necessary and you initiate treatment, you're not going to get any coverage at all. They're just going to deny it because it wasn't authorized. So that's one of the big things that the patient should be aware of. They have to know their own insurance policy.
That's a biggie. So really, saying it, yeah. So that is really kind of important. You just hit that. Okay, anything else?
Well, you know, due to the HIPAA laws, the dental office cannot always obtain the necessary clinical information from the patient's medical doctor. So if the patient can help the dental office and have their medical doctor send a copy of their sleep study, send a letter of medical necessity, and any pertinent notes that are in the patient's file regarding what led up to the referral to a sleep apnea dentist, that's often very helpful, and it will just save a lot of time for the dental staff to have to track everything down so the patient can be proactive by getting that done. And also they have to know their policy again, and if there's a referral that needs to be filed, they have to contact their primary care physician and make sure that that's in place, because as the dental office, we are unable to send in a referral or request a referral.
So it sounds like the patient has to get involved. That's probably going to help their chances of getting coverage. And that's what we found through our office. So have you found that out as well, that the more a patient can get involved with all that? Because a lot of times it's true, we can't call for them. You know, they won't give that information to us. But if they can kind of help us with all this information gathering and things like that, that's really when it can lead to more success.
Right. Basically, the dental office is working as part of their healthcare team, but the patient has to be the one to initiate certain things so that they do get everything in line before they are actually even seen in the office. A lot of times when you go to a general doctor, you don't need all this beforehand, but to see a dentist for sleep apnea, there are certain things that you need to have documented. So if the patient can get that moving, it's just going to be better for their care. They're going to have better care.
Definitely. And I have actually had a couple patients that unfortunately sometimes even took over a year here. I mean, that we're kind of working with it. And then some who really work at it can kind of push things through a little bit more quickly with the reimbursement. So definitely get involved, and there's a much better chance. So what if, and you work with dentists throughout the country, correct?
Correct.
For training. Okay, so I'm going to put it out there. So if our patients are listening and they've had some one of these oral devices made or going to be made by a dentist who says no, they don't know how to do medical insurance, or if they said no, it's not covered, what can our patients basically, you know, I'm sure they can give you basically them your information. Where can these people find you to say, hey, you know, to their doctors, you know, you might want to call Jan and find out more information. What's the best way to be reached by them?
The best way to reach me personally is email, and that would be, my email address is Jan Palmer, that's J-A-N-P-A-L-M-E-R, the number 4, the word sleep, S-L-E-E-P, and that's at roadrunner.com. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of traveling, Dr. Sosenko, so that's really the easiest way to contact me.
Okay, that's great. And let's see, anything else? So I didn't really touch upon Medicare, and I know that wasn't really one of the things because that's probably a whole other section. Is there anything, from my end, we're just slowly investigating the whole world of Medicare, and I'm in Illinois, so I really cannot comment on it. From the dentist that you're aware of, do you know if that's changing your medical coverage in different states? I mean, just if you said a very broad statement on that. People, if they are listening to and they're Medicare patients, can you comment at all on that?
I can. I am very well versed in Medicare. I've done a lot of work with Medicare in the last year. Yes, the patient has to meet certain criteria, and mm-hmm. when you have your dental evaluation, the dentist will know if you've met criteria or not. You mm-hmm. have to have a diagnosed sleep study. Hopefully, it is a recent sleep study. Medicare doesn't like an old sleep study. If you've had a sleep study 2 years ago and you've been doing nothing for your treatment, in the meantime, they may end up denying your claim.
Yeah.
Medicare does hold for the durable medical equipment, which is where the oral appliance is classified under. There is a deductible. Right now, it's about $160 for the deductible. Mm-hmm. After that is met, they will pay 80% up to their allowable fee, which may be different than the dentist fee.
And probably will be. I'll tell people out there that if their dentist is using a variety of appliances, and they should be, or the professional type, there probably will be a difference between what they consider their maximum and what the actual device is. But, okay.
And the other important thing is that if the doctor is going to be doing the service for a Medicare patient, you have to make sure it's a Medicare-approved device, because not all oral appliances,
right.
even though they're accepted by the FDA, not all of them are considered under the Medicare, it's called a PDAC contract. There's only certain ones that they will cover it for.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's important, again, for the patient to get involved.
Okay, so that's a whole other world. The Medicare is definitely a whole other.
I could do a day lecture on Medicare, yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
But there
right.
is coverage available.
Okay, yes. So, well, that's so good to know, because for many years we were saying we can't get involved, and now we're starting to get a little bit more involved, but we haven't gone through that whole puzzle yet. But, great. So thank you, Jan. Anything else you need to comment on, Rad?
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today.
You have been so helpful. And, you know, anybody out there who, again, has heard that no insurances will not cover for your oral devices for obstructive sleep apnea, have those dentists call Jan or get a contact through email. She's a wonderful trainer on that, and I know she'll be lecturing again this coming summer at the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. And we hope that you enjoyed this information and that you found it useful for today's topic for maximizing insurance for obstructive sleep apnea and snoring from a patient's perspective. And for more information about oral appliance therapy, visit Dental Sleep and TMD Center of Illinois. That's my website at tiredofsnoring.com. And if you look under resources, there will be information on how to contact Jan as well, as long as some other topics. So we hope you enjoy today's presentation. This is Dr. Lydia Sosenko for the Sleep Health Connection.